the booth, fire in the booth, fire in the booth, fire in the booth.
Hello and welcome to episode 10 of There's a Film in That.
The return.
There's a film somewhere long ago in that.
It's been a long time, guys, since we've recorded a podcast.
Ryan has aged terribly in that time. His voice is gone. That's how long it's been. Apologies.
I'm not sorry. I'm sorry.
We're all sorry.
I am sorry because I think in the Christmas episode I even said we were talking about our friend Matt. And I said that I feel we're beholden to no one on this podcast.
You did say that.
But now I feel it's been so long, I feel really ashamed of that statement.
Yeah.
Sorry, Matt.
Sorry, Matt. And other listeners that have found me in the street.
Yeah? You being approached?
Yeah.
Is fame starting to hit you both now?
Definitely.
I think it's that.
I mean,
like
we are nearing 6,000 listens.
Woo woo!
Shut the front.
Yeah.
Does everyone get to like episode 9 and go, where's 10?
To be honest, I feel like episode 4 and 5 are the only ones people listen to.
Really?
Isn't it like in the middle?
Yeah.
People don't like starting from the beginning.
No.
And also, people were a bit funny about third act
and
things.
Is that a segue?
It was a segue.
Nice.
But I think there is something to be said as well. Like, we can pretend it was a mid-season break, let's do that, but we can also, there's a lesson to be learned that sometimes I think script writing, the momentum falls off, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, there is, for anyone who's ever tried to write a script, they'd probably hit a stage that we reached where life takes over a bit and other things happen. Script writing, unless it's your full-time job, it's something you're trying to fit in around things, especially with two or three of you. So, let's pretend it was a lesson.
Yeah, learn, guys.
Yeah.
Unless you're listening to this for the first time, and then there's been no break, and we don't apologise.
Welcome to episode 1 of There's a Film in That,
well,
series
the
2.
That's the beauty of podcasts. If you're coming into this late, the series might already be finished.
Yeah.
We are broadcasting from the future.
Oh, so now we're just highlighting an unnecessary thing.
Mm.
I mean, why has it been such a long time, guys? What have you been up to?
Fuck it. Yeah. I've got a little baby on the way, so that's important.
That's super exciting.
Series 2 will have a fourth member.
Oh.
A silent fourth member of Taffet.
Crying
primitive. And shitting in the corner, much like us.
Yeah. Probably a bit more articulate.
Yeah.
If your child was going to be like any member of the cul-de-sac.
Ooh.
Oh, hate preacher.
Yeah. A solid choice. Straight out of the traps.
Oh, I don't know. I'm hopefully the baby has knees.
Well, if not, we know a guy who can sort you out.
I don't know. That's a good question. I'd like to think Earl Erna.
Earl Erna,
homeless.
Oh, we've given them such terrible things.
Oh dear.
Piano player.
Yeah, creative soul. You can take that bit of it, not the homeless bit.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, congratulations.
That's big news. Huge news.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
What about you, T? Had a baby?
No babies.
A baby?
No. A creative baby. I went and made a film.
Ooh.
So I was back to Ireland to make a film.
Fancy.
Which was, good experience. I've just finished the edit now. Off to sound design and all that now.
Nice. Has it got a title yet?
Laid to Rest.
Nice.
Yeah.
Laid to Rest.
Dark comedy. About a father and son who accidentally murder a burglar on the day of their wife/mother's funeral.
It's quite topical at the moment.
Yeah, Heather Green.
How quick. So?
Release.
That thing in Heather Green.
What? I haven't heard of this.
Oh, mate. So
well, you know what happened?
I was going to say that was so. I thought that was so niche. I thought you were making a joke. How is this topical?
Minus the funeral bit and the son. This guy in this like 30s.
Oh, is this in the garden? His back garden? He
I don't know.
Burned a body or something?
Like no. He stabbed him. He fatally stabbed him, and then like the other robber tried to. Sorry.
Yeah. Yes, I know what you mean.
This is why we don't do a news.
The spate of the spate of stabbings in London for our international listeners. Because the first month in recorded history, it's more stabbings in London than New York, isn't it? I read that. Yeah.
Wow.
But I have one other story before we get onto your life, Ash.
Okay.
And I've been holding this off telling the both of you because I think it's quite This could be very conspiracy theory, or this could be quite interesting. So, mentioning New York, I also had a little trip to New York and went to Heathrow. Actually, I'll jump back. Went to do my boarding passes online, and my better half's got printed no bother, and it said, then go to the airport and collect mine in person. We're like, oh, that's a bit weird. Went to the American Airlines desk. We were separated. And then they asked us a load of questions. Where have you come from? What tube station? How long did it take? And we were like, this is a bit weird. But they got the boarding pass, went on, got to the gate, did the boarding pass. And there's a woman with a board. She's asking everyone for their name. Say, Tian O'Sullivan. She goes, oh, I saw your name here. And I jokingly said, is this for the upgrade? And she said, no, this is for TSA security. Please go that way. And I was taken off for extra searching and everything else. Chatting to the guy who's doing the search, I said, is this random? He says, no, you're on a watch list. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And so then I went, but got all fine, obviously.
This is amazing.
Went and sat down. And then I was like, what is happening here? I had different theories. So apparently it wasn't random. Someone suggested to me it could be different, like, weird flight patterns I've had in the past or different things. It could be purely based on that. But then I thought back to episode one of our podcast when I pitched an idea about a child travelling to America to assassinate the president.
Trump. Yeah.
And someone, I pitched this idea to someone since, and they said that could very well be the case.
Fuck! So maybe we're all on watch lists.
We joked about it at the time, didn't we? So we're on a watch list now. I am on a watch list now. This is no joke.
Oh, what?
Crazy,
huh? Oh, yeah, the plane will fight.
And I'm definitely on a watch list now. I'm discussing this on air for a second time.
I'm going to America in like 3
weeks.
Yeah,
so I was going to say...
No. Have you been on a flight, though, since that episode?
But it's only the States, isn't it? I've been on lots of flights since that episode, but it's the US that are mental, right?
But you were only listening into the story.
I wasn't telling it.
That is so fucked up.
You know what? Because I'm not a conspiracy person type, so it could very well be random. It could be based on flight patterns or whatever. Well,
yeah.
So just someone said to me, like, historically, people flying in and out of Ireland and different airports and everything,
right,
with the history there could be a carryover from all the weird flights you've done in your life.
Wow.
But
that is crazy.
Yeah. Do you know what? I honestly thought that you were going to say something else. Story.
I thought it was going to be about a chocolate bar that you found or something.
Yeah. I just thought the story, or, you know, something else. I don't know. But it won that.
No, that's a good story.
Wow, man.
Does that put you off traveling? You're going to stay at home now? Just to avoid airports?
Yeah. No, well, it was a bit, it was disconcerting at the time. I'm not going to lie. I was like, what? I was like, where has this come from? And so it's just a bit off putting, like, you know? So, extra searching and all that. And so I'm intrigued, though, that they said, and I had a little look at the time as to why you can be. I searched and Googled it, and people were saying, you know, some people had gotten it every so often. So I don't know if there's different levels, whereas other people get searched every time and everything else. So I'm intrigued the next time I go as to what happens.
Was it a lengthy process?
No, it wasn't too bad. In fairness, we were one of the first at the gate, so I just got taken off this extra. But there was a few people after me. I wasn't the only one on the flight.
This was on the way back?
No, it's on the way to America.
On the way to, Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah.
But you didn't have to do any additional checks when you landed, because that's always the ball late.
No, that was...
they always give you that stink eye, don't they, in the States?
Both of us were put in another queue. And it was this weird process where you had to go and you go to the machine, you get a picture taken and all that, and then I was taken off to another queue again. But then I was like, oh, fuck, this is going to go. I'm going to get taken away again now. But that all went quite smoothly then. So, interesting,
that's
huh?
Mental, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Man. Wow, that's cool. Yeah. Well, or not, but well done.
Thank you. You got back.
That's the most important thing. Back, did you have a nice time there?
Had a very nice time.
It's a cool place, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a cool place for films as well, like in terms of seeing locations and stuff. The whole thing feels like a giant film set. Mm. You see all these places. We went to the delicatessen from Harry Met Sally. And
nice.
Yeah.
Like, I was going through Central Park and seeing...
Ghostbuster
like,
Land.
Yeah, all those, and so many films. Like, we did a little bike tour, and the guy was saying, here, this was filmed here, this was filmed there.
Fun,
like,
those bike tours. I did one of those. Did you one of those?
No, because I was hardcore.
Bike tours are cool, man.
I wish I did. I wish I did more tourist things, because I was there for a long time, so I didn't. I just felt like I'd just learn it.
You didn't learn
the first thing I did when I went there was find the Silver Cup factory in Queens, where Christopher Lambert and Clancy Brown fight it out. in the Highlander at the very end.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That was the first thing I saw. I was like, oh, God.
Did you drop your luggage off?
I did.
First?
Then, yeah. Right. No. No, just wheeled around with like a 20 million kilo bag.
Actually, the coolest film location I ever went to, it was again back in America down in Florida when I was much younger. I used to play a lot of golf, and I went to the water driving range from when Something About Mary.
Okay,
that was always my favourite one, yeah. You on the range is on the edge of a lake, and then you hit balls into the lake, and they have little islands and stuff. That was huge for me at the time. I used to love that film. Yeah, that was cool.
That film is 20 years old this year.
Oh, wow.
Ugh.
Interesting reaction. Yeah. And how about you, Ash, then? How's life been?
I've not done anything. I've been sat here waiting for you guys.
That's, you're like Miss Havisham in Great Expectations.
Yeah, I spontaneously combusted during the time that you've been away.
Oh, my God.
Is that what happened in that?
No.
Yeah.
She set fire to herself.
Yeah. I'm fairly sure it was random, though.
She caught herself on fire.
Did she?
She was like, come here, Pip. Do you like things, Pip? Let's play cards, Pip. And then Pip come back.
And she's
married,
on fire.
Married. Esmelda, was that her name?
That's right, yeah.
And then she set fire to herself.
We haven't lost the obscure references, listeners. Don't worry about that. Where we act out references that only the three of us know.
Welcome to Dickens, the podcast.
But I know you've been up to lots.
I've essentially started my own motion capture company since.
What?
It's been busy.
Again, thought you were going to say something else.
Busy.
Wow.
Super busy.
Wow, yeah. That's incredible, dude. Yeah.
Do you want to do some motion capture?
Yeah,
we'd love
call
to.
Me.
Oh,
I'm the man.
Oh, I'd love that.
target3d.co.uk for all your motion capture needs.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Should you can sponsor this podcast.
Yeah.
Nice.
Wait.
Good publicity.
Actually, I've noticed that a lot of podcasts, more and more that I listen to, are getting sponsored.
Should we start?
And it's actually in a bad way though. These like 3 or 4 minute interruptions.
Yeah, you kind of have the mid. Yeah, like,
oh, in the middle.
Adpocalypse.
And it's always really obscure stuff. There's a lot of bed companies.
You want to be careful because the ads aren't. They are tailored to you, so they're not the same for every listener. It's very clever technology pioneered by Arun Paul.
Because there's one I listen to where the hosts effectively play out the advert.
Right,
they've
so
been
like
given
Adam
freedom
Buxton
to like their advertising thing, and they one of them like role plays being a customer, and the other role, so it's like it can't be targeted.
Yeah, no, those ones like Adam Buxton does at the beginning.
But YouTube,
I haven't heard that.
I mean, a similar thing, but on YouTube, that you're right, it is that it's what you've been looking at.
Yeah,
which is always odd.
Yeah, so careful, just careful, everyone.
Careful of looking at things on the internet.
That's weird. It's always like dungeon. Beds. It was chainmail.
Sex dungeon.
Right, wow. So that's what we've been doing.
Ah.
Should we talk about things now? What is this episode all about?
This is episode 10, act 3.
Oh, the final act.
Yeah, well, actually, yeah. We'll try and get it back to our story now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, yeah.
We're approaching the end of the podcast series.
Potentially, yeah.
How do you guys feel like it's going?
I think it's gone.
Oh.
I think it's been peaks and troughs.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
More peaks than troughs?
I don't know.
I think whatever the next
How
thing...
deep is your trough is the question, I think.
How deep is your trough?
Is your trough.
But before we get into that, before we get back into our story, since Christmas, you guys seen anything that's been exciting? Tell you what I saw. 3 billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
Mm. Yeah.
Really enjoyed it.
Very much enjoyed that. Didn't think it was as good as In Bruges, still, which is one of my favourite films. So I'm
I watched
still
that
sticking.
Again as well, actually, just after it.
Very good.
Yeah, just because I
hadn't comparisons, seen it. What do you think?
I love both of them.
Good answer.
Two good films.
Very good.
In comparison to some films which I think are rubbish, those two are good.
Yeah. Very nice.
So good reviews there.
Ooh, we passed through Oscar
we have.
Season.
Yeah.
I think I'll call everything apart from that the P.T. Anderson one.
Phantom Thread.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah. I've not seen that.
But, I think I've seen all of them now. I think Shape of Water was a worthy winner overall.
I did not enjoy that film.
Do you know what? The one that still sticks in my mind after the year of film is Dunkirk, in fairness. Yeah, that's the one I still find myself drawn back to visually and as a cinematic experience, if not the strongest story. But that's the one that's kind of stuck in my mind and I think will maybe stand the test of time as a really unusual, exciting film. The other ones, there was a lot of classic kind of story in there and good storytelling techniques, and Shape of Water was interesting. Great production design. But Dunkirk, for me, is the one that kind of stands out. And actually, the other one probably is Get Out, then. I was glad to see that got... Because that one screenplay, I think, didn't it? So yeah, that was nice to see that. That was, in terms of what we're doing, that was definitely a good screenplay and something different.
Mm. I thoroughly enjoyed... Lottie took me to see I, Tonya.
Oh, man. Loved it. Yeah.
It's a very good film.
Yeah. I quite like the whole... Because it felt very similar to Casino. In tone, I thought it was had a real similar, not as maybe as violent, but I like the pace of how the film went. And I think just as a Sebastian Stan, because you never remember who he is. I thought he was absolutely brilliant in it. Old Bucky Barnes, but that's the only thing.
That's what he's been up to.
He's been old Bucky in it. All over. But I liked to. I liked. Tonya was one stuck out. Annihilation.
Annihilation was very good. Yeah. I did enjoy that. Yeah, that was good. Cool. Alex Garland on Netflix, sci-fi for anyone into that kind of thing.
What happens?
Quite
an
out there film. Natalie Portman, Oscar Isaac, her husband has gone into this kind of blob mist in the Florida marshes.
Oh, and everyone.
She ventures
stuck
in with
there,
some other scientists to go out and find out what happened to him.
Yeah,
it's very good.
Then it goes really weird at the end.
The one thing that Tin and I were talking about prior to today is Dark.
Oh my God. So good. Good.
I haven't seen it.
So flipping good.
Netflix, German series. Watch it with subtitles, not the dub, is my advice for anyone interested in watching it.
Okay.
The dub has really thrown me off. And from what I've read since, the dubbing is not perfect translation. Whereas the subtitles are better. But oh my God, so good. You think it's a dark crime thriller, don't you?
Yeah, you think like The Killing or something.
Yeah, and then it goes to places you're not expecting. And I've been balls deep in theories ever since. It's been quite something. So I can't wait for season two next year. So, and then, did I speak about Casa de Papel?
No.
With the awful translation of Money Heist on Netflix.
Yeah.
Spanish bank robbery series. Oh my God, that's brilliant as well. So good. Concept being these group of robbers deliberately get themselves locked inside the Spanish mint so they can keep printing money and rob more.
Yeah.
And they're trying to like draw out the hostage situation for as long as possible. Oh, it's so good. So much fun. There's problems with it, but it's overall it's just such good entertainment.
Oh, that sounds brilliant.
They just let off let loose.
Is that another Netflix?
Yeah, it's called Money Heist on Netflix.
Yeah.
But it's it's originally the House of Paper, the Spanish series, the Casa de Papel.
Ah, nice.
Look at that.
The last one I brought up is it's kind of rubbish, but it's fun. Is Blood Drive on Sci-Fi, which is, you can probably get it on if you got like a Skybox or something, if you're on the box sets on that. And it's ridiculous. It's like a grindhouse type thing, and it's mashing every type of grindhouse genre there is, but it's like set in futuristic 1996 or something like that, and in LA, and it's about a guy, something I can't remember, something Slink, who sets up a gumball race, because oil prices are so high now, and there's been this thing and fracking has gone like so bad that they've created this massive crack across America called the Scar, and all this weird shit has come out of it. And so he does a thing called the Gumball. It's like a Gumball race called the Blood Drive. If you win, you're the primo, like the best driver. But the cars run on blood, on human blood.
Oh, and
they've got
the
engines, and the engines are like teeth or whatever. And it's so put, but it knows it is. But it's so good. I absolutely loved it. It's one of the most gratuitous things you can watch on telly. And episodes are quite long, like 45 minutes each one, so they're decent sized episodes. And if you like all your, if you just don't want to watch anything too, like kind of like Dark is very much like put your training your brain. The other one is like, man, this is just
switch
ridiculous.
Off. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
But enjoy that.
Nice. Very good. Oh,
those were our recommendations as well, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What were our recommendations from episode 9, guys?
God, who even knows?
Well, like Christmas stuff.
Yeah, probably.
Who knows? We'll try and get back into our standard format. We thought we'd give a little bit on the theory of Act 3.
What's an Act 3, Tiernan?
An Act 3 is the last bit of your three-act film.
Cool.
The resolution, effectively.
What happens in it? Always.
Things.
What always happens in an Act 3?
A climax. Sometimes a twist.
Nice.
An end?
And an ending. And I guess the aftermath of whatever the climax of the film is, you often get a hint of what comes afterwards.
Or
the return to, I guess, to normality.
Or if it's like The Lord of the Rings, Return of the King has about 50
yes.
million endings. So
yeah.
Once that war's done and everyone's cool, and the rings in the fire. I think you should end the film there.
It seems like that happens a lot more and more recently. A lot more and more recently.
Mm.
Seems to happen a lot recently with films. You always think, oh, that would have been a good place to stop.
Well, I can see. I agree Lord of the Rings takes it too far. But I can see it's the reward for following a journey. If the character's gone, you want to see they've overcome, you know, the romance issue or the war issue or the battling the evil thing, and they've done the thing they set out to do. They, on the way, we talked about, I think, in Act 1 and 2, they've become the person they needed to be to finally do the thing, save the princess, kill the boss, destroy the ring or whatever. They've developed those skills. And now the reward to the audience, you get to see the aftermath of that. Lord of the Rings takes it too far.
Yeah.
But certainly, like, I'd argue destroying the ring and ending there is one thing, but it's nice to spend a little time with Frodo and his friends to be like, this is the payoff for what
jumping
they did.
Up and down the
Middle
bed.
Earth's okay again. You can get to see them. You get to see them, and you get the reward of what they've done.
I think it should actually have ended on them just jumping up and down the bed. Like Frodo waking up.
Freeze frame.
You're going to go, Gandalf! And they're all just like, God, fucking nuts on the bed. And then it just like cut to Enya. Or whatever I had at the end.
You will know.
Was it that one?
No.
No, I don't think it was. That was my go-to. That's my go-to Enya. I don't know any other Enya.
What is the Enya? Oh, it doesn't matter. But yeah, but then I guess if you're taking your story from a novel, then, you know, in Return of the King, there is all those kind of tying things up, endings, and you know. So
But then again, as a filmmaker, it's your decision whether to not follow that to the letter, I feel. So I think they took it a little too far. But I could see the thing doing. But in general, I would agree with the principle of having something, some little payoff to the whatever you've seen, the culmination of whatever you've seen. But sometimes, part of the thing, I know you've got a bit of theory there in front of you, Ash, so there was, because we found a Script Lad article, which I think we've used for Act 1 and Act 2, and they have, what are their essential elements for an Act 3?
Well, interestingly, final culmination, which is what we were just discussing, and then it talks about the character arc. So it says, the main character is now in a new situation with a new tension, and he or she must have opportunities to go back to the old character and see if there is change. There should be. I like that. I like that last sentence.
Again, I the filmmaking rules are there to be broken. I'd argue that isn't always the case. Yes, most films are like that. But there's also interesting stories to be told about the person who can't overcome whatever is required of them. I think there's one film that always sticks out in my mind for that, with a kind of a character arc that I can never quite work out, which is Shame, the Michael Fassbender film by Steve McQueen. And he's a sex addict.
Yeah.
And there's, I remember, it's quite like a very art house type film, and you're kind of having to really work to understand what's going on with the character at times. But I remember not quite, there's not as big a change as you're used to.
I think that's the same with Clockwork Orange. I think that, I mean, people will argue this, like, so you burn in the face, but, you know, Alex is, right, a little reprobate, isn't he?
Yeah.
But the whole way through it, he's evil. And then the idea of he's forced to change, like literally forced, like ever physically forced to change, sat down in a chair, eye drops, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then at the end, he's commended as a hero for, you know, What have you? Yeah, he's right then, isn't he? It's like everyone like loves him, but he's not changed. He's still an evil little fuck.
Yeah.
So the journey he's gone on isn't that he's changed. He's just beat the system.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's why it's always interesting when filmmakers take a different approach.
Yeah.
And I always remember having I won't say the worst day I had in film school, but the day I remember in writer class I really struggled with. We were shown Michael Haneke's Cachet, Hidden, and it was the first time I'd seen a film like that where it doesn't answer things for you. And I found it the most frustrating experience at the time.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of left with no answer to some of the plot points that are presented in the film. Yeah. Like, and that's part of it. I remember finding it really frustrating at the time, but I've since watched it since and hopefully learned a bit as a filmmaker and learned that sometimes it's interesting not to give your audience everything. It doesn't have to. Whilst these are all good rules in general, and I think they probably do apply to our script, but you don't always have to have these, which is the interesting thing.
And it does. So one of the essential elements that the Script Lab refer to is a twist, a final twist being a surprising, explainable and motivated change in direction of the action. And so I suppose that to the same point, really, that's not something that we're necessarily going to have in our film, although we may.
Yeah, there's certainly potential for a twist in our cul-de-sac as to if and who survives and everything else like that. But again, I'd argue sometimes the twist is there not being a twist. And then some people take it too far. We were chatting just beforehand about Mr. M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, he loves a twist.
His pursuit of twist kind of almost ruined his filmmaking at times. Yeah. And ruined him, because he's a very, very good director, but almost had the sixth sense almost ruined his career in some way, because everyone was trying to preempt and guess his. You couldn't watch his films through a normal prism after a while, because you're always thinking, what is the twist here? No, Sixth Sense is one of the great twists in cinematic history. Usual Suspects, another one.
Sure.
So when they work, they're brilliant. Mm. But I guess sometimes I don't feel you always have to have. I mean, go back to Lord of the Rings, that doesn't necessarily have a twist. You know, he does the thing he sets out to do ultimately, and it doesn't. Mm. There's mini twists along the way where you think, oh God, you know.
But are they not just turning points?
Well, I think they're in pursuit of, you think there could be a twist, you know, Gollum popping up at the last minute and different things like that. You think, oh God. But then if you're kind of versed in classical storytelling and hero's journey type things, he's probably always going to do the thing. That's my big problem, actually, I think, with all the superhero films at the moment. Because you know, ultimately, there's not going to be any twist, because they're all part of this bigger franchise building to something like Infinity War. So no one's going to die. Or occasionally they talk, maybe there's a death in one of these films. There's always going to be some minor superhero that no one kind of gives a shit about anyway.
Yeah.
So that's the big problem with cinema for me at the moment, is it's lost any sense of excitement and twists on the bigger picture. And that's why when something comes along that's a bit unique, like Get Out, I think it rightly gets the credit and deserves, and hopefully more films get to be made like that, because bigger cinema's certainly lost any sense of jeopardy for me.
I think there's a thing, isn't there, with films like Get Out and just in culture where we are. If you think back, like, you know, Rod Sterling's Twilight Zone, pretty much there was a twist at the end of each episode. Mm-hmm. Something happened which locked in the character, and whether or not there was a change in that character's, they learnt something or they didn't. We learned something about them, and there was a twist, and that. So you'd watch that because you'd be like, it would kind of bring it back to, you know, you'd bring it back to something in your life or something that's quite relevant. And I think that's why the twist in Get Out, for example, is powerful. You know, it is quite a, even though it's kind of a twist, it's kind of not, you know, it's.
But they originally wrote the ending differently, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that would have been in some ways even like too depressing. But that Twilight Zone kind of relate back to your own life thing. That, yeah. I assume it's my understanding that that's why Charlie Brooker's Black Mirror series are always so popular, because they have that twist, but that relatability.
Yeah.
And was there anything else in that Script Labs then?
Yes, they talk about an obligatory scene. The obligatory scene at the end of a film for which the viewer has been waiting and looking forward to. If tension is an eager anticipation of the future, then the obligatory scene is one that the viewer almost consciously expects. Yeah. In a way, it has been promised to the audience.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Nice.
So, the very end of Big Trouble in Little China, Jack Burton, we expect Jack Burton, because he goes, oh, I'm not going to stay, I'm going to go. And Jack Burton goes, and he's on his, and it's the film start, ends how it starts. Jack Byrne driving on his truck, and that's how you want it to end. And he's on the radio, and you know, and it's always in horror films we expect it. Like, there's so things we know.
That's an interesting concept. So
the monster comes out of the back, and you're like, oh, shit.
Because there are a lot of films that use that opening scene, and then you. So would you
kind of mirrors it 360? Is it?
Yeah, and then as the audience, you always know that you're going to go back to that point.
Well, there's lots of different tools for that as well in terms of TV. I know a lot now does the fast forward, jump backwards, jump forward in time. So sometimes you'd almost go as far as you've seen that scene. Yeah. Just haven't seen the ending of it.
Yeah.
I know Breaking Bad did that quite a lot, didn't it?
At the beginning of every series, yeah, right? Yeah.
Did it, so you know that you're seeing something again, but now you're seeing how it actually fully plays out, maybe. But yeah. But for me, certainly. And I mean, some of them, to talk about the opposite, actually, of the Lord of the Rings, some of them are great in their abruptness, some really great Act 3s. To use the Usual Suspects, then you got that twist and it ends pretty much immediately afterwards, like, and you're left kind of stunned. Actually, do you know the other one? One of my favourite Act 3s, so much so that it's something I'll just watch on YouTube every so often, End of Whiplash.
Yeah,
and that culmination that they tattered about there is the final moment, and the look in each other's eyes. The film ends 5 seconds after that. There's no, they've almost done it slightly upside down there, and that some of the twists have come beforehand with what happens on the stage, and he kind of sells him out and gives him the wrong music, and he has to leave, and so the twist comes there. But the actual culmination, this whole story of him trying to impress this mentor figure, is only answered in that very last couple of seconds with that close up of the eyes, which I think is one of the best third acts in cinematic history.
So so let's talk about our third and final act.
Let's apply some of that to our cul-de-sac. So I guess now the challenge as always is to apply that theory to our cul-de-sac, and even though some people might have felt we've lost this concept many moons ago, I'd argue that maybe this is the toughest. This is the toughest act now. There's lots of films out there with great concepts that haven't quite stuck the landing over the years, and it's certainly like, I guess, whatever's happened before, a good ending can save a film, or a bad ending can ruin a good film. You know, it's your overriding feeling, I guess, when leaving the cinema. So I think this is always quite a tough one.
And I think that's why we're going to go for something super upbeat. We're going to go for like something. Makes people feel really cheerful. The goal is for them to leave the cinema laughing and closer to their friends, and you know, having a good day.
Yeah,
that's the.
And then it was all a dream. And they absolutely dared.
Oh.
And then as they walk away, their leg slowly straightens and the limp disappears.
Oh
my god!
Sixth Sense.
Yep.
But I mean, we've had lots of discussions in our mid-season break, and I think they've all boiled down to really whether this film was taking the horror approach and killing people off one by one, or whether there was a culminating event, like the theory we just discussed, and a lot of the other films that we've mentioned, that something brings it together, obviously. To use our much overused reference, Magnolia and the Falling Frogs. So whether there's one event that's going to unify the cul-de-sac in its terror of this climate change event. So yeah, I don't know. You guys, any thoughts on that?
No. Yeah, we should get one.
Well, I'm definitely of the... Originally, when we started this off, I kind of was all about the one-by-one, like people going and who's going to be left standing. But as time's gone on, I've certainly leaned towards now this kind of unifying event. So that would be my two cents on it, that we'll have something that is going to, if a midpoint of the script has been someone's death, which I think we discussed in Act 2, that's a precursor to what's going to happen at the end. In terms of climate events, there's lots of things that could happen there, whether it's a fire, like a complete drought, even the opposite, like a flood after everything that's happened, some sort of tornado, hurricane, or anything. That's probably a bit too out there, but something along those lines. Or the other option is it could be man-made. as a result of what's happening. But someone
could be
takes
one person's decision.
Yeah, exactly. That, yeah, that
is
yeah, to light the match effectively.
Yeah,
something that something that has a sense of irony. I think we were talking about.
Yeah,
so that perhaps the final decision is taken by someone rather than being a forced.
Yeah.
Incident.
Yeah. God, Catman thinking he knows best.
Yeah.
If it is people just slowly dropping out, or you know, one by one in terms of the sequence of shots, can it have Elton John's "I'm Still Standing" playing?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd like that.
By Earl on the piano.
It could have, it could have Chesney Hawkes.
Yeah.
At the end.
Yeah. If there's one left.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or none left.
No, I agree with you, T. I think. If it went down the horror route of, you know, the kind of slasher thing of taking people out one by one, it's we have another thing to dodge around. We could lose a turning point, or we could lose something in the third act. What have we got to give? Because the thing is with those horror films, and with those, like with Friday the 13th and Scream, and they still have that third act, that climactic Scooby-Doo third act, don't they? Where, and we don't have that. We don't have that. Oh, it was.
It was the weather.
It was the weather all along. It's just like some, like, you know, 8-bit picture of a map on someone's face or something. You know, we don't have that. So I think if we were to, the third act has to have some kind of culminating event in order for it to rely on, in order to kind of really blast home the message of what we're trying to say.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. I think what we have to think carefully about is what is the message we're trying to say. Make sure we pull it back to, you know, where we started to set out with this.
Yeah.
Because it is essentially still a climate change story, right?
Yeah.
It's about the futility of what people are doing to the planet and whether or not. And
any way back,
yeah. And how that revolves around the small story of the community garden space. So we want to kind of keep that arc, as it were, going to the end of the story in some way.
Yeah.
But knowing that we want to, I assume that we want to have some kind of moral, or maybe we don't. Maybe it's.
I think the thing is, it's the. In my opinion, and this is where the third act stuff is really important, is that I think it's not a case of dismissing morals. We were talking about very briefly earlier on off air about Breaking Bad, and the thing about Breaking Bad is that it really, really pushed you to question your moral compass. It's the several episodes where, you know, you're willing for someone to do something which is totally against what you would ever do, you know, and that's hard in itself. And there's also films that have that ending where you think, why do they do that? But actually, there's almost like there's a greater good. And I think it's morality is something which is a storyteller's one of the greatest, like, tools they can use at the end of a thing. Whether they go down the hero end or down the if you don't do this, this will happen, and then that is entirely up to us, really. I'm personally attracted to the scenarios where the good never comes out correctly. Like there's the twist at the end. Those Black Mirrors. Or the Twilight Zone episodes, or even like the, you know, Tales from the Crypt, that type of thing, where the fable, the kind of fabulistic feel to it.
Yeah.
But that can have, that can still happen. Both can still kind of happen on one level, because the beauty of a multi-stranded story is that there are single minds in this. It's not one like hive mind. Everyone's got their own views.
But there's the interesting thing for me then is whether that's the purpose, whether all these different views won't ultimately matter.
Yeah.
And this thing unifies everyone in a way. Because I guess from people's experience of storytellings and the idea if we're looking for a twist, I guess the thing people will be trained to do is to look for who's going to make it. So it's whether the twist is that no one's going to make it.
Mm.
And then. I don't think that gets us out of the side. I think there's obviously still, as you know, people read into things, whoever's left last, we have to decide that, you know, someone has to die last potentially. And but yeah, whether we're saying, like we said before, I think on the podcast, that none of it will matter, whether you believe in God, whether you've lived a good life, whether you're running from it, hiding from it, whether you're ignoring it, like it's gonna get everyone. So yeah, whether that's kind of the twist to bring it back to the theory that for us no one will survive. But then, but obviously that's quite a dark message. So we probably won't win any feel-good points there, but that could be the interesting ending to it. So yeah, in pursuit of that, then I know, again, in the few months we've had off, there was various conversations, different things. I know one of the ideas we chatted about was maybe the idea of getting everyone into Mikhail's bunker somehow.
Yeah.
Could be a good place to get to for Act 3.
Sure. So I guess just as a reminder, so we've got Mikhail, who's been stockpiling lots of supplies. He was kind of aware of the event coming. He was keeping himself to himself, but through a chain of events, they've all managed to get into his basement, or he's invited some of them into the basement. Mm. And then,
in terms of keeping up conflict, I think it would be nice to have I don't think he should invite them.
Right.
Yeah.
I think he should. Yeah. It would be more interesting to have a group of people there against his will to begin with, certainly. Anyway, if they could settle their differences then in there, but to have, I guess, as opposed to just having everyone invited in there.
Yeah.
Almost if he was to turn up and they've broken in and they're already there, rather than them trying to barge their way in, so for whatever reason they've gone to see if this is all true, and there's a group of them that have gone in there, some reluctantly, some have gone in to find out, and he's just come down. And someone's coming. One of them coming behind and locked it all in.
Yeah. No, it'd be nice to have a load of people there, in kind of aggressive circumstances, I guess.
Oh, well, with him locked out almost.
Yeah. Or I mean, the other thing is going even as far as to say they kill him to get in, or you could go that far, or they could trick him, or they could or certainly battle in against him.
And then Domino's pizza.
it would be like one of the walls in Nightmare. It's like. There's three items on the table, and you have to do a riddle.
Go through the pork cutlass.
Yeah. Sidestep to your left. Oh, Dungeoneers.
I don't think we'd want a load of people just invited there, then having kind of like, oh, thanks, Mikhail. You'd want people,
a little party.
Yeah, you'd want people. It'd be great to see a room full of people who are all there for different reasons, and there's conflict within that bunker, along within the outside world. So. And then so we'd somehow get to the place where maybe that's it, that the fire potential climate change event that engulfs the cul-de-sac leads to them all retreating to his bunker for that, and with their belief, whether they all still believe, or some of them still believe they can see it out in there, or whether some of them are starting to realise this is the end now,
right?
And they're in like a sauna basically.
So I quite like the idea that almost in parallel to what's happening in Mikhail's underground bunker, there might be someone above ground who is desperately trying to keep the community garden alive, or is just kind of blind to what's happening around them, maybe thinks that God's going to rescue them, or is just ignoring.
Are you hinting at a particular character in that?
the hate preacher. Or just ignoring the circumstance.
It could even be...
It's just
be
completely that, losing the plot.
They could even be utilising what Mikhail's got and taking that while they're duking it out in the safe room. He's or she is taking the water
and using it
on the garden.
Yeah, see, I really like that idea, because that really is futile at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Thinking that, if we can keep a bit of life going.
I don't know if it's so kind of deranged that they still think that there's going to be a Garden of the Year awards, or
I think at some point that's going to...
But you know what I mean? Like if it is just someone completely falling apart on screen. Who just refuses to acknowledge that the thing that they've been so looking forward to isn't going to happen because the world is ending.
Yeah.
That could be quite powerful, I think.
Yeah. Whereas someone like Valerie Led, who's lost her husband potentially at this stage, I think Gerald was potentially going in Act 2. So whether she's made that her life raft, holding on to the competition.
Yeah.
And she, it's the turning point for her that she just can't, she can't bear to let the competition go, because that means letting him go. Deep.
That is deep.
I think there's something as well in that a lot of shows do it now, maybe a little bit too cavalier, where they'll a character will run the course, run their purpose, and then they'll die.
Right.
They don't even get a gimme of, well, you can just leave, they'll die, you know. And that's something that I think is you can still consider on this. If there's a point where, in the third act, that we achieve their objective, or their objective becomes impossible, then we have to then become part of the fodder, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the, you know, them just stuck in the room. Because I think there's a lot of times when you watch films and there's the, you know, it happens in Star Trek quite, it's a bit of a joke in Star Trek with the whole, you know, you're wearing the red top. Coat. Yeah. And it's that type of thing. I think if you've got a character that's got a arc and the arc is complete by the end of Act 2, which I doubt will happen, but, or even halfway into Act 3, then we have to make a choice if they're going to get chopped.
Mm. And so for me, if everyone does die, the kind of what in the theory it said the obligatory scene, it's coming back to the meaning of what we're trying to say, whether if everyone is to perish in the bunker or someone's to venture out with the water, what's going to be the obligatory scene after that? I mean, are we going to see, I don't know, like, not, you know, I don't want it to be cheesy, but the idea of, like, is it going to finally start raining or something like that? It's the idea that, like, yeah, now that everyone's gone, everything can reset itself.
Right.
Or something like that. Or whether it's a time lapse and something happens or...
But what if that futile gesture of trying to keep the garden alive is the only watered bit of ground in the country, so it is the place where... You know,
it's the new Garden of Eden.
My God. something sprouts at the end because it's the only bit of non-scorched earth left.
Because
it was kept so nice.
I don't know. That'd be quite...
That's quite nice.
Yeah.
So maybe it wasn't so futile after all.
Well, yeah, it was futile for the human race and the people involved, but it was, yeah.
Oh, fuck!
Platoon.
William Dafoe. You know, ages ago, when we were doing
I know.
Do you remember that time? Okay, so, like, episode one.
That is ages ago.
Yeah. 10 episodes ago, when we were coming up with our treatments, coming up with our stories, and you had the one about the drug dealers. Sorry, I'm all excited. You had the one about the drug dealers, or the piranhas. And
that's right. Yeah, right.
I can't wait how you're going to smash these together.
piranhas
survive.
They grow legs, only legs. But what ifs? You know, when I was younger, in my formative years, a bunch of us always talk about if we were ever going to grow weed, in you do it, but what you do is you'd have a field, and then you'd grow it under the field itself, right? And have hydroponic lights, and you'd grow the weed under the field. Okay, that's when we talk about it, it'd be amazing, whatever, and you wouldn't even know it was there. Stay with me. What if that is the case? What if there was someone that was growing something, and there is still life under that, and that is the last bit of, because it's so, we have to kind of think about science a little bit on this, in the fact that if you're a bit of scorched earth, the whole of earth is scorched. Why has this bit not done it? Just because a bunch of pensioners and people in a cul-de-sac have looked after it really well? It's not like really gonna.
Well, no, but then it's realizing that Mikhail had the foresight to stockpile all this water months before there was a water shortage. But to your point, I suppose there would be other people that were also aware of that.
Yeah.
So maybe there is a, it's like that bit in the War of the Worlds. There's a whole city underground.
Maybe. Yeah, that's
palatial.
What I mean. Growing weed.
Do you know what, because there's one bit of theory we didn't discuss from the Script Labs bit, which was kind of we didn't include it because it was a something not to do theory, which was introduced any new concepts or new characters too late in the game. So I think if we do something like that, we have to go back and work it in.
No, do it
like,
right.
I remember that time.
These guys are fun.
A secret weed farm under the cul-de-sac.
The God Catman was growing for his arthritis.
No, but it's whether, you know, to bring back to Ash's point, if it was a little it's the bit of Earth that survived. Like, even though I get what you mean that why isn't others doing this, but it's whether that's kind of, you know, taking advantage of storytelling techniques, and it's more symbolic than anything else. Yeah, that right. Patch of land, it's not like,
but also
science,
why would anyone else be watering if there's a water shortage and no one's got anything to drink? What other set of circumstances would lead to someone needing to water the ground?
It's
quite a niche situation.
It's like the end of the road, isn't it? There's that little, you see the little plant bud.
As it, yeah, I suppose that the imagery might be quite cliche. I suppose that gets used quite a lot. Could be a little marijuana leaf that just to tick all the boxes.
Yeah,
Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
Well, I think the thing we can take from this is that there are a lot of different threads that we can continue in the third act, but it's all got to draw towards this big, unifying, culminating sequence, and I don't think we want to go into too much detail on air because we should keep it back for the big read in a couple of episodes. But
well, certainly for me, I quite like the idea of building it to everyone ends up in this culminating event is coming. It could be quite a long, like, it doesn't have to be a one-off instant event. Like, if it was to, you know, there starts to be a fire, say, to go with the fire idea, something catches a light, the last half an hour of the film could be almost the fire in real time. Like, they all have to retreat to this bunker. It's whether that's, you know, there's a build-up and they get in the bunker, it's like seeing out days and it's this gradual descent, or whether this culminating event and the bunker happen simultaneously and you're watching the last half an hour of the human race, effectively.
Of course,
they all retreat to the bunker, and they say it's starting to heat up. Their emotions are running high, and like whether there's it's a battle to get into the bunker, and so or whether someone sees it out and takes some of the water.
What if like Spencer Tompkins is just still stuck up in his room? He just crawls down.
It's like the end of Terminator. He's just melting. little thumbs up out the window to Kirsty. But something like that could work for me. And I say then, and it's and I'm trying not to go to, like, now we put that idea in my head, I'm trying not to have this idea of like someone opening the bunker in 10 years time and they're all in there like skeletons, and like it's like I it's very bleak, but I quite like that you're seeing the end of it all here.
I do, but
I feel maybe it needs some ray of hope, but the ray of hope is like a ray of hope without us here.
Oh shit. Have you guys seen Life?
Yes.
The
little funny creature thing.
Jake Gyllenhaal one.
Yeah.
That's got a messed up great ending of a twist, but a foreboding kind of ending to it, without giving a spoiler away on that one, which is very, I just had that imagery of if they're stuck in that thing, the last thing we see is them banging on the window, or exhausted banging on the little kind of speakeasy glass slot that's left.
No, I'll watch that. Definitely, it's not been long on my watch list, so I'll watch Life now.
I think it's interesting. Everyone's like, it was a bit of a poor man's.
That's got a great third act, though.
It has an incredible third act. It
ends very well.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's also good because it's over, but it ends very well.
Always good review of a film. I liked when it ended.
Yeah. I really liked the end.
I just really enjoyed that ending.
No, but yeah, no. So that for me, so from the death of Gerald in Act 2, it's building as the... that death sparks the chaos in the cul-de-sac, with people reacting to it in different ways, falling out, people latching onto the garden, or people moving away from it, whilst the weather continues to scorch down, and it's all culminating towards an event such as a fire. So I guess for me it has to be a fire. I think, I don't know what you guys think, I don't think anything else makes sense as a unifying event.
I think it's how the fire starts, isn't it? Is kind of, to me, it is a fire, but how it starts is where probably are, maybe we need to kind of explore. Is it just a natural, like an electrical fire, for example? It's got too hot, something's overheated, that's happened. Or is it the ground is simply just so dry that it's caught on fire? or is it someone, is it man-made? Is it someone done something?
Yeah. And I suppose in real terms, we're seeing that in California and in southern Australia at the moment. Every summer, they've got these huge bushfires.
Well, I always remember wildfires last year. Yeah, quite a lot sadly dead and everything. It's happening more and more. So, actually, there's another the other little story I remember a few years ago with the Shard in London.
Yeah,
that there was a car melted under the Shard, wasn't there, from the reflected sun rays.
It was the walkie-talkie.
Oh, it was the walkie-talkie, was it? Yeah. So whether Spencer's wheelchair heats up and reflects some light and sparks a fire. I don't know the science behind that.
It's the stained glass window of the church. Refracts.
Oh my God. It's an act of God. My God. Actually, you know what? The other thing, this for an obligatory reference, there is a scene, I won't spoil it for anyone, but there is a cul-de-sac on fire in a little-known show called The Leftovers.
There is, yeah.
That might be good for everyone to watch as a recommendation. First series of The Leftovers. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I might go back and watch it. I've not heard about it for a long time since we've been off air. So
no, it's still there, guys. Still at the top of my list.
It's annoying because it's not come back on the box sets.
Okay.
I can't watch season 3.
Oh, shit. One of the best seasons.
Is it?
I'd say top 3 seasons.
I did like 2. No, we're going off topic.
I think that's where it should build to then. So that culminating event, the fire, everyone retreating to the basement, and then the politics of what plays out in the basement and whether someone ventures out. And I guess then there's the who of it as well.
The who?
So who is Pimble Wizard. Who's going to die and who's going to, in what circumstances? And who's going to be the person to venture out? Because I say even like
as long as it's in my generation,
is easy to say. Like because again, so people read into this and it's kind of like who's going to be doing?
Is Tommy going to be there?
Oh my God, this joke is not hitting home. I admire your dedication to it, but
is there a bellboy?
So yeah, any thoughts on that?
No.
I got lost with the who.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Well, I feel if we end our Act 3 now, this could be a good place to do it because no one will have any expectation.
Yes.
So, yeah. But cool. Well done, guys. So I think we vaguely know where it's going then.
Yeah.
Now to write. Let's make a hip hop tune. Phantom Thread, yo. 2018. Pete Anderson. Fire in the booth, fire in the booth, fire in the booth, fire in the booth.
Yeah, did you see that film called Phantom Thread?
No.
Did you, Tenon?
No.
Well, I'll tell you about the film, it was fucking good.
What happened in the film, would you tell me please?
Well, a bit of string, it ends up dead, 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 motherfucker.
I'm not convinced, that's an Oscar winner.
It's an Oscar winner.
What about a bit of string?
Yeah, a bit of string goes out for a baguette in the morning. Walks across the road, gets hit by a bag of spaghetti.
Spaghetti-O's?
Spaghetti fucking O's.
Do you buy into this, Tiernan?
I didn't think it was about that.
It fucking is, Tiernan. You haven't seen it. I watched the film, you didn't see shit. The film about the film was that it couldn't go to heaven, couldn't go to hell. It just floated around on the model plane, hence Phantom Thread.
I mean, makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. Okay, I was lying. It's about something else.
Tell me what it's about.
It's about that time when you do a little poo. Stick with me.
I don't think that's real.
Okay, I lied about that one.
Okay, what else you got?
Okay.
Tell me what the film's about.
Well, it's about something in the water. A shape that was in the... Wait, no, that's another film. I told you I saw the film. I saw all of the Oscar films. Especially Phantom Thread. That's time for him now. He's gonna go and make Cornish pasties for Christmas markets in Bruges.